welcome to episode 110, the introduction and the interview at the beginning of part 9 of this miniseries. I am very pleased to welcome both Tim Pinkala and Rudy Tate. Did I pronounce that right?
You got it.
I got it right. Okay. Nephews of Alex Pinkala, who was a member of Easy Company. And unfortunately, was killed along with Skip Muck in Bestone, and it was shown in the miniseries in part 7. So first of all, I want to thank both of you for joining me and being willing to share the story of Alex both with me and with everyone listening. So thank you both.
Okay, it's a pleasure to be here, Rob.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, especially, I mean, we're all around the globe, so you know, we managed to find a time that works for all three of us, so that works well too.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and give you background on Alex's family.
Please do.
Alex Pinkala Sr. and his wife Mary Kinski originally immigrated from a small city outside of Krakow. A small village, in fact, outside of Krakow in 1907 to the U.S. Mm-hmm. They were married in 1908 and proceeded to have 13 children in the next 20 years.
Wow. So once again, let me interrupt you. They traveled. They knew each other already in the small town.
Right. They did know each other in the village.
But they traveled together, or their families each traveled separately?
I believe they traveled separately here, but they, as far as I know, I'm not really sure who they came with.
No, but they knew that they wanted to get married, or it was just.
No idea, but we do know that in 1908, they actually got married. So
Okay.
We heard they were sweethearts in Vencik, or however you pronounce their village. But anyway.
Okay.
So they proceeded to have 13 children, 9 girls and 4 boys in 20 years. And at the last birth, Mary died in childbirth.
Oh, wow.
So they were left without a mother. And at that point, the last boy was given to supposedly a family that they knew and raised as John Babinski, a different name. But anyway, my mother, Evelyn Pinkala, was born in 1921, and Tim, or Alex Pinkala Jr., which everybody called him Jr., he was born in 1924. So,
and what number was your mother, and what number was Junior?
Okay, you're going to make me get my book out.
That's impossible to know. Don't forget to ask him about our 59 cousins and their names.
Okay. Let's see. I think Alex, I'm trying to figure out, 28. So he was about 4th from the end. And my mother was like a couple ahead of him.
Okay. Fair enough.
And when it gets confusing when you have that many aunts and uncles.
Yeah, that's true.
Anyway, the 13 children produced 52 cousins.
Wow.
So Tim always says that there were more, but I've only been able to find 52 cousins.
Tim, your father was where on the list also?
He was 6 years older. In fact, he graduated from high school, I think in his 20s, maybe because of the war. But he was born in 1918.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So... whatever, he might have been one of the oldest, if not the oldest, huh?
Well, what happens a lot during those times is people would go to high school and then they drop out and work.
Right.
And there was no, you know, didn't seem to be any problem with doing that. So I'm sure that's what happened with Tim's father. In fact, my father, the same way, he went, dropped out of school, went to CCC camp, which was a conservation corps, one of Roosevelt's Let's Help Everybody programs. And so it wasn't unusual for kids to be older in high school.
Right.
During that time.
And most of the, we, South Bend here, where Alex was from, and where we were all from, is where Notre Dame is. And most of the siblings had some sort of job at Notre Dame at some point, whether it was in the laundry. Rudy's mom, my Aunt Evelyn, was worked in the sacristy at Notre Dame. And then I ended up going to Notre Dame and working in the sacristy with her, basically. And by the way, as at one of our... at our New Orleans reunions, Rudy's mom was the last sibling and passed away at the ripe old age of 98 and a half.
Wow.
So she was, out of the 13, she was the last survivor. And even though I'm from California, I visited her every year, and with Rudy and with a lot of our other cousins, we were a very close family.
Yeah, a lot of the older girls worked as maids at Notre Dame. And Alex Sr., in fact, became a janitor at Notre Dame. So there was a lot of connection to Notre Dame. In fact, Alex, whenever he signed anything while he was in the Army, always put down as his hometown, Notre Dame, Indiana.
Oh, wow.
And they may have had a post office. They probably did. But
yeah, there was a post office, Notre Dame, Indiana, because that's where I would send our, we had a token Catholic priest as one of our cousins, and that's where I always sent him stuff, was Notre Dame, Indiana. So,
in fact, during the Depression, the family lived in a house owned by Notre Dame. And as soon as the girls got old enough, they bailed and went and got married. So,
okay.
But Alex, my information says that he enlisted March 24th, 1943. And he was only 18 years old at that time.
Okay.
And he, I don't believe he finished high school, but I can't verify that in any way. But he enlisted in the Army and was sent to Fort Lee to become a cook. And the family history says that during that time, there were a couple of his friends that told him about the paratroopers and convinced him to go try out for the paratroopers. And the story was that they washed out, but Alex made it into the paratroopers.
Oh, wow.
And the earliest we see Alex with Easy Company was Fort Bragg. And I know that he did go. I've read letters that he has written to his aunts, my mother and another aunt who he is very close to. And he went on the maneuvers with Easy Company in Tennessee and Kentucky and trained with them from then on, went over to England and stayed with Easy Company during that whole time. So from his letters, the letters written during wartime were censored.
Right.
They didn't want you talking about where you were, what you were doing,
or what you were doing.
You were in, any of that stuff. So a lot of the letters are, how you doing? I'm doing fine. Can you send me food? Or candy or apples or whatever they were hungry for at the time. But Alex, as far as we know, I wasn't old enough to remember him. I was born in 40, and he actually came home before he went to England. And my mom told me about the party they had, but I don't remember it at all. So,
you were four. So I'll give you a pass on that one.
Yeah, I was three. And I have talked to our older cousins who do remember him and gotten stories from them also about Alex. One of the cousins said, Alex actually climbed up on the chimney of the power plant at Notre Dame, which was probably about 150 foot chimney. So we don't know if that's true or not. But anyway.
And did he jump off with a parachute?
No, he did not jump off with a parachute. But from his letters, he really enjoyed being a paratrooper and really liked it. So the interesting thing about Easy Company is, I'm sure you know, that along with their great bonding that they had with each other, that they were, I don't know, unlucky enough or lucky enough or interestingly enough, involved in D-Day, Operation Market Garden, the Battle of the Bulge, and first at Birch's Garden, although that's up for discussion as to who was really first there. Although the story is that even though they may not have been first, they were the one that got the most souvenirs. And Alex was killed in action early morning of January 10th, 1945. He was in a foxhole with his good friend, Warren Skipmuck, and a shell landed in the foxhole and killed both of them instantly. Their remains were buried in France originally, and then they were moved to the Luxembourg American Cemetery. And he's buried there with, I think, Skipmuck and three other Easy Company vets, and also General Patton is buried in that cemetery. And interesting, Patton is on a little hill, and his grave faces all the other graves. That's apparently the way he wanted it to be buried, facing all the men.
He's talking to the men.
Yeah, we were amazed when back in 2005 when we visited that cemetery. I was shocked when I saw George Patton was, you know, buried there. I couldn't believe it. We didn't know. I didn't know anyway. You know that he was
I knew.
Buried.
I know everything.
Yeah, he was the very first gravesite. Let's put it that way. When you walk in.
So at that point, I would say the family always knew that he was killed in World War II. The story was never really known because, number one, we didn't realize, and we should have realized, I guess, that they were having reunions. And we could have gone to the reunion and talked to them at that time. But no one ever did. I know George told me he started going when he was 7 years old. I think we would have gotten a lot more information. We got a lot of information, but I'll let Tim talk about.
Well, one thing that was interesting, Rudy, was one of our cousins. Rudy has a weekly cousin call with several of the cousins on Sunday afternoons. And one of the things that we did find out was that I think Jimmy Likatowicz, one of the cousins, their last name were Likatowicz, and their dad was in Patton's army, or how was he involved with Patton, Rudy?
He was in Patton's Third Army, the one that took a 90 degree turn and went for Bastogne when nobody thought he could do it. And finish the story.
Well, what happened was is our uncle Augie, August, who was a brother-in-law of our Aunt Irene.
He was very close with Alex. He was the husband of Aunt Irene.
Yeah. Yeah. And he was looking, coincidentally, looking for Alex Jr. And unfortunately, the story that Jimmy told us before he passed away was that his dad said that he finally found Easy Company on January 11th, which was the day after Alex passed away. So best that we could tell, trying to figure this out, was, you know, the famous, I think, lieutenant at that time, Spears, from Easy Company, had talked with our Uncle Augie and said, oh, I'm so sorry. He was killed yesterday when Augie finally found Easy Company. It was the day after. So, you know, it was unfortunate, obviously, that he didn't get to him sooner. But that was an interesting fact that we really didn't learn until about 2 years ago.
Right.
I'm pretty sure you don't know the answer to this question, but did anyone ever discuss, you know, how the family was informed about Alex, you know, getting killed? I mean, was it via Augie? Was it something, you know, I'm assuming that the Army also, you know, has to inform the family in some way. Question is,
one of my cousins, Ed Galgis, who is 3 years older than I am, told me that he remembers vividly his mother sitting on the front steps screaming because they had gotten a telegram that Alex Jr. Had been killed in action. But as I say, they didn't really know any details until our cousin Jimmy Likatowicz, again, was in a bookstore and picked up the Band of Brothers book and started reading it and found the information about Alex, because he then told his mother, who told my mother, and she calls me up, and I remember the conversation vividly. She said, can you buy books on the internet? And said, yeah, I can buy books on the internet. And she said, I need about 5 copies of this thing called Band of Brothers. And so I ordered them and sent her 5 copies. I got a copy. I don't know if I told Tim about that at that time.
Yeah, I think that's where I got my original book, I think.
Okay. So
that was in like 2002, right, Rudy? Right when,
well, it was published in 92 and the miniseries was done in 2001. So right. 2002 begins our story with Easy Company. At one point I remember hearing about the miniseries being done. And for some reason, I thought, okay, they're going to base it on Easy Company, okay? Base it on the book, and it's going to have big Hollywood actors and, you know, a whole different story and everything. So I wasn't too, interested or whatever. And then somehow I came in contact with, and I'm not sure to this day how it happened, if it was a Facebook entry or I saw something on the internet. And I got in contact with a gal named Marav from HBO. And she basically at that point said, hey, your family of Alex Pinkella, you're invited to come to the Emmys. And I'll let Mr. Pinkella take the story from there.
Okay, well, I want to just interrupt for 1 second. So the book itself only mentions Alex's name 6 times.
And it's not very much.
It's mostly about the fact that you know, that he was killed in Bestone. There's one other point where they talk about that he and Skip Muck, you know, they were shooting mortars of their own, you know, in one of the engagements and things like that. But
Yeah, they.
before we get to the HBO story, what was your generation told from your parents throughout the years? I mean, was Alex always brought up in conversations, or was it a taboo subject to discuss the fact that that he'd been killed in World War II? Or was it something, that they were very proud of, that we had a brother that fought in World War II and gave his life for freedom?
It was brought up a lot. They were very proud of his sacrifice. And for some reason, for years, I thought he was killed during D-Day. And I don't know where I got that idea from. But as I say, there wasn't any information about exactly where, when, and how. In fact, a question I always wanted to ask everyone and never got around to it until later, thinking about it, was I know the army would have shipped him back to South Bend to be buried. And for some reason, he was not shipped back and they buried him in Europe. And I don't know the reason. I know that they had trouble locating his father, Alex Sr., to pay him the insurance money. I asked Eileen O'Hara, who is the niece of Skip Muck, if she had ever found out why Skip was buried in Europe. And she never really was able to get an answer for that either. So I don't know.
And
But as far
so
as
how many cousins do you have that are named Alex after him?
do we have any that are named Alex?
Interesting.
I don't believe we do.
I don't
In
think
fact,
so.
there are only two male Pinkellas left out of the 52 cousins. And another cousin who's into genealogy told me that Alex Sr. and Mary have 481 descendants,
Wow.
including the 13 brothers and sisters, the 52 cousins, and then
Grandchildren and
so
great-grandchildren
on.
and so on and so on. Wow, that's
And
amazing.
I'm sure the number is increasing as we speak.
And why not?
Yeah, but as far as family discussions about Junior, they always called him Junior. He was always talked about with great love, and I never heard anybody say anything bad about him in the family.
Right. No, I wouldn't have thought that they would. No, it wasn't a question. My question wasn't if someone would say something bad about him. Was sometimes people don't like to discuss tragic events. That was more.
Yeah, I never ever talked to my dad about the war, ever. So that was a pretty general theme, even with the vets, even with the 101st Airborne
Well, did
vets,
your father serve?
until he was in the South Pacific in
Oh,
Guadalcanal.
okay.
And I mean he was a gunner, he was like Moots. He was a gunnery sergeant, tail gunnery
Wow.
sergeant, but he never once mentioned it, and unfortunately, we didn't get involved in with Uncle Alex until my dad had passed away in 1988. So,
But yeah, I never heard Tim's dad, Uncle Ed, talk about his experiences in the war at all, ever.
And was you, did your father also serve?
My father was drafted and found to have active tuberculosis.
Okay.
And ended up in a sanitarium, which was the procedure in those days. And I can remember my mother holding me up to the window to see him. And in fact, we moved in, my sister and I and my mother moved in with the Lickitowiches in a little 3-bedroom or 2-bedroom, I don't even know what it was, tiny place. And lived with them for like 3 years.
Oh wow.
So,
Very interesting. All right. So let's go back to what you were talking about
we,
HBO.
yeah, so that, so unfortunately, timing wise, we weren't yet in contact as Rudy somewhat mentioned with, you know, with talking with Marav from HBO. We weren't in contact when they had the Europe trip where, you know, they had the opening of the HBO series. So we weren't involved at that point. And so we missed that. Had they known about Rudy and I, or somebody from the family, I'm sure we would have been invited, you know, to go, just like, because I know Eileen and Tom O'Hara went, right, Rudy? So they went to Europe for the grand opening, so to speak. And
we assume HBO may have tried to find family. But as I said, there was only one, at that time, one Pinkella in South Bend. And apparently they never got a hold of him, because as far as I know, they never talked to anybody in the family before the miniseries was filmed.
And the other thing is, as to timing perspective, so they had, it's approximately 55 reunions of the Betts that you're aware of before our family was known or was found, whatever. And it wasn't until the night of the Emmys that anybody, which Rudy decided not to attend the Emmy situation.
Which you remind me all the time.
Yeah, but I don't want to beat him up now. So he didn't go, but he was, you know, he was a 4-hour flight away, whereas my wife and I were in San Diego. So it was much easier for us to attend. And so that was the first time in 55 years that a Pinkella was involved at all with the Band of Brothers. And so we of course had watched before we went to the Emmys, we had watched, and that was what, 2002?
No, the Emmys were like in September 2002, and the show came out in September 2001.
Right. So we were the first ones. We entered this hall at one of the huge hotels there, and of course everybody was there. I mean, you know, anybody that was alive pretty much was, there was probably 1,000 people there, and many of the actors were there. Les Hashey was there. I had, it was funny because I talked to my wife and I said, we have to find Les Hashey, because he was in his squad as a replacement. And sure enough, Les Hashey was there. Webster's ex-wife was there. Les Hashey's daughter was there. And so I was fortunate enough to, the first guy that walked into the place was Les Hashey, and I walked up to him and he says, you're going to have dinner with us. We're so happy to have you. As I told Rudy, I was a little nervous going there, you know, not knowing anybody and whatnot, but they made us, the actors and everybody made us so welcomed, you know. It was just truly a unbelievable experience. So we had dinner, and afterwards they had a book signing with Major Winters, and he was already pretty much in like a wheelchair. He could still walk somewhat during that time, but he was signing books, and one of the things, so I had the book, which Rudy had mentioned, and I went up to him, and of course, you know, we would tell him our names. So he looked up at me and, you know, just stared for a while, and he goes, because, I was the first one that from the family. And so he just said he was one hell of a soldier.
Wow.
And he signed my book. And of course, as Rudy's mentioning, I've never let Rudy live that down.
Never. He never lets me forget that I don't have Dick Winter's signature in my Band of Brothers book, but I do have a letter from Dick Winters. I have my own hang tough letter from him. So I treasure that.
Yeah, I have one of those too, and I don't let my book be around Rudy wherever I'm at, because
It's
I
gonna
know that that
disappear.
book would disappear in a heartbeat. So that book is separate from Rudy Tate. That's all I can say. But
The veterans and their families welcomed us with open arms. Everybody was just so happy that we had shown up. We have 52 cousins, and in any group, there are people that are really interested in things, and there are people that are kind of interested, and there are people that really aren't interested. And that's the way our cousins
And
are.
then
We have
the
some.
fourth category also, the ones that are so uninterested that they get angry whenever you bring up things.
Yeah, there, I'm sure, are some of those. But we have, I would say, at least five or six. Not all of them are living anymore, but we had at least five or six that were very interested in Alex Jr.'s story. And there are some even down the line that are very interested in his story. So 2002, after the Emmys,
Well,
we
before that, Rudy,
okay,
I
go ahead.
wanted to say also that the other one that got to me right away was George Love. And he had been so involved, as Rudy pointed out, since he was 7 years old. He made it a point to take myself, and for part of the time, my wife also, to meet all the actors during that time, during that night. So, the guy that played Nixon was there,
Ron Livingston,
and yeah,
Livingston, yeah.
many of the actors were there, and we got to meet them and their wives, and as Rudy's pointing out, everybody was so kind, one of the things that I remember in particular was what was Martin's first name, Rudy?
There were two Martins.
John Martin, Sergeant.
Yeah,
Johnny Martin.
Johnny Martin, the next morning when we were having breakfast, and by the way, most of these guys had a glass of whiskey at about 8:30 in the morning when they were talking to
So
us.
late.
And and I was talking to Johnny Martin, and he was shaking and he was crying. And he said, "I was about 50 feet away from your uncle when they got hit by that M88." And the other thing about George Luz is, as you remember in the scene, was that his dad was
Was on
heading
his way there,
towards, was on his way to their foxhole, and thankfully he didn't make it, and that's why we have a George Luz Jr.
That's right.
because he lived past the war and into the 1980s, I believe.
No,
And
he
so,
I think he died in an accident in 1998.
oh yeah, 19 late
Yeah, it was
90s.
late 90s.
Every time I watch the Band of Brothers, I learn something new about the vets, that I either forgot or didn't remember. So, but yeah, so that weekend was, and Rudy was starting to talk, that weekend was fantastic, to say the least, and they won the best Emmy. And we were there, I think, for 3 days. And then I think it was, what, 4 weeks later, Rudy? 4 or 5 weeks later,
Yeah, not much later.
that they had their, whatever the number was, the 56th reunion or so, in Phoenix. And so Rudy and I and one or two of our other cousins, Ed
Two
Galdjous,
cousins,
came.
Bob, Don Hoblitzel and Ed Galdjous.
Yeah, they came to the Phoenix reunion. And of course, at that time, they were at the height of their popularity, the men. And I mean,
There were a lot of people there.
yeah, I mean, they're just, because they had book signings, and giveaways and this and that. I mean, you had to stand in a very, very long line to get an autograph from, you know, from the vets. And Les Hashey was at that one. And I, you know, I think we talked both, but I was in particular very close with Les. And in fact, to this day, his daughter, even though I haven't seen her face to face 25 years later, pretty much every day we do an email back and forth.
Oh, wow, that's great.
Yeah, she hasn't come to any of the, even though I beg her to come, she hasn't come to any of the reunions since then. But we're still a pretty conservative couple of people, and we go back and forth with jokes and what's going on in this crazy world of ours. But
Les Hashey was, he knew Junior very well, and he was a great guy and just wonderful to talk to. And we just were so happy to have met him. And I remember saying goodbye to him and saying, well, we'll see you next year, Les.
Yeah.
And I'll let Tim finish
well,
the story.
Unfortunately, in fact, I can't even remember how it happened, but he got ill. As I recall, his daughter, Holly Feingold, had mentioned to me he didn't jump on his illness in time, and he unfortunately passed away, which was just a terrible, you know, terrible thing, probably within about 5 or 6 weeks after that Phoenix reunion. So we were never able to see, you know, see him again.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was unfortunate. He was one of the guys that some of the men never went to any of the reunions. And I remember a couple few of them, but when the Ambrose book came out and the series came out, they finally came out, mm-hmm. so to speak. You know, they felt good about discussing, you know, what had happened with them and all the stories and all that. So it was, in a way, that really helped. I don't know how many. George Loves would probably know. But there were, I think, quite a few men that started going to the reunions again, or at least
there were still some that never came. Liebgott was one that never came to a reunion.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I don't know if Spears ever did either.
I remember hearing that Spears showed up once. I think so.
Yeah. I think we were there at that one. It was either him or one of his children showed up. And I know, believe it or not, one of Sobel's children, I think, showed up at the Phoenix.
Right. I remember
right.
him.
George yeah. told me that Sobel's son came at one point, and they basically embraced him and brought him into the fold. But I think he never came back. He was just there once.
Right. Right.
But I remember talking to him and asking him about his father and about his portrayal in the miniseries. And he basically said, you know, I never knew my dad other than being a father. And he was, you know, to me, a really good father. So he said, he never really saw any of that depiction that they had in the miniseries in his father.
Right.
And I remember reading about his history. And he, as I recall, Sobel was very successful.
Yeah,
you may know more about that than we do.
Well, I know that he attempted suicide. He had a lot of problems later in life and attempted suicide, and I think he ended up he did a lot of damage from the suicide.
The other guy that I remember that was successful was Dye. The one that he wasn't portrayed very well. He was kind of like spaced out and left the battlefield, if you recall. That's
well,
what
I hear my Dyke.
Dyke. Yeah. Dyke, yeah.
And he actually was not a bad soldier. He was not like he was portrayed in the miniseries.
Right, yeah,
he actually was a very good soldier. I believe he was injured, which was the problem, rather than freezing up.
Right.
But anyway, we're digressing a little.
No, that's what we're here for. Yeah. This is a conversation.
Digression?
Yeah, sure. What did the two of you and your family members think of the way that your uncle was portrayed? I mean, I know that he was mostly in the background for most of the scenes, but there are scenes where he's there in the foreground.
Well, right. Yeah, one of the things is we don't know for sure whether he spent any time at Toccoa. We don't think so. So he came in, that being the case, we think he met up with them in Fort Bragg, which happened to be our last reunion last year was at Fort Bragg in September of last year. And because Skip Muck and Don Mularkey were so close, and because of the backgrounds, you know, the Catholic backgrounds of Skip Muck and Alex, they became very close. And so, you know, kind of like by default, Alex became very close with Don Mularkey. Mm-hmm. So that's how all that started. And so we were very happy, I guess, in answer to your question, and thankful that he got so much press, so to speak. Like you said, he wasn't too much in the book, but he was a lot in the show, you know, in the series.
And we know that the family was not contacted ahead of time. And I talked with my mother a lot about the portrayal, and she had one big thing was Junior didn't smoke. They had him smoking in the miniseries. But, well, Mom, you know, it's possible that he started smoking. It happens. No, he would never smoke. And if he swore, I don't remember if he swore or not, but she said, oh, he would never swear or smoke. And then she told me that
things that happened in the
she was very happy
are slightly different than what happens growing up in South Bend.
Yeah, and she was very happy though that they found a Polish, someone who is Polish, to play him in the miniseries. And I said, "Well, Mom, he could be Polish, but his name is Matthews, and he's a Brit. I mean, so probably not." I don't know. But that was her take on the portrayal. All in all, she was very happy, I think, with how he was portrayed. You know, you can nitpick things like, we're pretty sure in the series, miniseries, he was wounded the day before he died. But we never heard anything about that. So don't know if that's, you know, they tend to. There were in Easy Company, there were 140 with seven officers. So I was told that during the history of Easy Company, that they officially had 366 men in the company. Mm-hmm. And there were probably more, like 10 or 12 more, that were never officially, that were in the Easy Company, but never long enough to be on official rosters. Right. So there were a lot of soldiers that weren't mentioned at all in the miniseries. Obviously, you can't put everybody in.
Right. I've heard and that so I think there are family members that were upset that their Easy Company man was not portrayed, or that it was amalgamized, you know, into some other character.
Yeah, what they tended to do, I think, is take three or four different characters with stories and kind of make it into one, mm-hmm. Or give it to one character. You know, I talked to Liebgott's granddaughter, and in the miniseries, he was portrayed as Jewish.
He wasn't. He's not Jewish. Yeah.
He wasn't. He was German Irish.
But the book,
I think.
In the book, it also mistakenly says he was Jewish. So Winters thought he was Jewish.
Yeah. Yeah, and but he sure didn't like Germans, that was for
That's
sure.
true. Well,
You know,
you
in
don't have to be Jewish to not like Germans.
the Blythe story where he was injured and died,
Awesome.
he didn't die. He was in the army for an extended period of
Right. George
time
even told me
before.
that Blythe's son showed up once at one of the reunions.
I don't ever remember meeting him, but there were a lot of people at the
Right.
reunions. Okay, so we just started going to the reunions and talking to everybody and meeting everybody. Very enjoyable. Really liked doing it. And Bill Garnier used to run the reunions. And the story I heard was that the 101st Airborne started having reunions, including everybody. And that went on for a couple of years. And Bill says, the hell with that. We're going to have our own reunion so we can talk to each other. And he was instrumental in keeping everybody track of everybody. And the guys always, knew phone numbers and addresses and locations. And Bill kept that up for a long time until he passed the reins, so to speak, to Herb Sewett. And he started running the reunions. And one day Herb calls me up and said, we're dedicating a monument at Bastogne with your uncle's name on it. Do you want to come to the dedication? And I said, oh yeah, I'd love to. How much is, what's the cost going to be? And he said, no cost, it's already paid for. And he said, you can invite whoever you want.
Wow.
And guess who I invited?
Tim.
So
How
that
much
was
did that co how much
Tim.
did that cost me, Rudy?
That was Tim's first trip to Europe. So in 2005, we went with 17 veterans. Tim and I, Eileen O'Hara and her husband, and the Swobodas. They're Is that how you pronounce their name? Their son was killed in Foy by a sniper, and he was on the monument too.
Yeah, it was his brother, right? It
Or
was his
was it his
brother that,
brother? Yeah, it might have
yeah,
been his brother.
was shot between the eyes. And so the 13 men that got killed during the Battle of Bulge was what the monument was for. All the people that got killed in the Battle of Bulge, of which
That
obviously
were
Alex and
that were an easy
right.
company, right?
Alex and Skip. And so, but right before that, just so you know, not that it's a big deal, but Rudy and I went to the next reunion with Scottsdale. I think we had one in Norfolk after that. And then 2005 came. And so that's when we we Rudy says, it was 17 days with 17 of the live vets that we were able to. I mean, we're talking, in my opinion, a life-changing event. I mean, being with Shifty Powers,
Earl
and one
McClung.
Lung McClung and all these, and Don Mullarkey, and who's our
Frank
postman,
Bracanti.
Frank Perconti, and the guy that played him,
I
and the
have a
guy that
list
played
everywhere
Frank.
somewhere.
What they did was, is the ones that were alive, they let either their wives come or a family member, a son, daughter, whatever. And then we went through all the different jumps. We went through their pads for, 17 days, every place where they went. We were there during D-Day. We were there on June 6th. So even though it
At
wasn't,
Normandy, yes.
in Normandy, even though it wasn't like 1960 or 1970 or 1980, it was an off year, but it was packed. I mean, there were, just all these heavyweight politicians and Every year, you know, is a big deal. And so so that was an unbelievable situation. I will say, one story I think that's interesting, kind of going back to who we met as with the kids and how they were thinking about their parents being portrayed and not whatnot, was Burr Smith was, I sent you the chalk 68, and you noticed all the guys,
I
Dukeman,
see
I
all the,
mean,
I recognize all the names.
love. Unbelievable who's on that chalk. I mean, when you think of the thousand that are heading towards, you know, France that day, and to think that all those guys were in that one plane, and we don't know for sure, even with Mooch, I don't think he's finally told me. Either Alex was next to or across from Burr Smith on that plane. And so his daughter, Susan Smith, became very close with Rudy and I. And she came to these reunions that we're, you know, telling you about also. She was also living in San Diego at the time. And her dad, who I think passed away in the 80s, is buried at Fort Rosecrans in San Diego. And my wife and I go to his gravesite every year and send pictures to Susan at least once a year. I think I mentioned that when I sent some emails to
You
you.
wrote
But
that to me.
and part of the story, and there's stories like this with some of the other ones, but part of the story is my Susan worked for a law firm that had about 250 members in the law firm, a big law firm here in San Diego. And my business partner, who I went to Notre Dame with, and we've been partners for 50 years now. I just had my 50th reunion from Notre Dame. The graduation was last Sunday, 50 years ago. And he had an estate planning attorney with that law firm. And that attorney's right-hand person, you know, legal paralegal, was Susan Smith.
Wow.
If you could even believe that. I mean, you just can't make that stuff up.
That's right.
And
Small world, as they say.
we had the reunion 2 years ago in San Diego, and my wife and I hosted it, and we all visited Burr Smith's gravesite that day, you know, one of the days. And so, you know, he went into the CIA, and he was in the CIA for decades. And Susan used to tell us a story where he'd come to the, you know, like if you could envision these guys with the long trench coat and the hat, you know, as a CIA person, a secretive person, he would come to her school and say, "Hey, honey, I'm leaving, you know, for a while. When are you coming back, Daddy?" "Well, I don't know if and when I'm coming back." You know, but she used to tell us those stories, which was really cool. So he's buried here. We go to his gravesite every year, and so, you know, one of
Inter
the just
interesting story. Susan showed me a or gave me a copy of the letter where she writes to her father and says, "Why do you do what you do, Dad?" And he writes back and says, "There are tigers in the jungle and somebody has to watch out."
Interesting.
So, but he was in Vietnam and probably in Laos, and as far as we know, maybe North Vietnam, who knows? But yeah, that was the 05 trip was something that, as Tim says, I'll remember the rest of my life. And we were at Normandy on D-Day. We were in Eindhoven for Market Garden. We were at Bastogne for the dedication of the monument. And being with the vets, it was just a wonderful trip all the way.
Yeah, one of the things that was on just on put on Facebook, we have a, as you might imagine, a Facebook page, with it's got like a reunion site, and it also just has a regular site with all the family and friends and associates of the family are on. In this story, Rudy, I don't know if you noticed it, but we remember when we were always traveling by bus, and one of the times there was a guy, I don't know if he stopped the bus or whatever, he was with his son, and a picture of this was just on Facebook this last week.
Yeah, he was like 8-year-old kid.
Yeah, 8-year-old kid, and they come on the bus, and they said, "Oh, can we meet you? You know, can we talk to the vets?" And they said, "Yeah, no problem, let's do it." The dad came on the bus and was getting autographs. I didn't quite remember that, but I saw it in the picture this week. And the little boy was able to talk to all the vets, and the dad was just couldn't stop crying, as I recall, just, you know, thanking the men for saving them, basically, for freeing them. And
yeah,
and
I remember the guy saying, "This is the best day of my life."
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And so even though in the United States we have this, you know, fighting going on amongst ourselves, over there every year they celebrate us. You know, they celebrate the United States of America coming there and freeing them.
Right.
It's a big celebration all the time. And so it's, you know, pretty cool to see. You know, it's definitely hard to watch some of our fighting here, you know, politically and whatnot.
Let me interject something. Tim has mentioned Notre Dame, I don't know how many times, and I would like to say, for the record, that I graduated from Purdue University with a degree in electrical engineering. So there.
But he's still a Notre Dame fan, I think. You know, he watches them in football.
Deep down, I can't get away from Notre Dame. Although yeah. Indiana is pulling me away.
Yeah. Yeah, Indiana winning the national championship was definitely a big positive. Next year, it's going to be Notre Dame, though. Mark, okay. You can mark that down, Rob. Next year, Notre Dame is going to win their first Yeah, their first national championship since the year my dad died in 1988. They are going to win it next year. So I just can't wait. We got screwed. We didn't make it. They didn't let us in, even though we probably would have beat them all, but maybe Indiana last year.
Well,
but,
yeah. Mr. Pinkella gets on Notre Dame football. He can talk for hours and hours.
Yeah, we don't.
But
we don't
let's get back to Band of Brothers here.
So we kind of took some time off. We went to a couple more reunions after the 2005 trip, and I don't know. I got busy. Rudy was busy. Whatever. The next one that we went to was in New Orleans, or that I went to was about 6 years ago, and that's when Rudy's mom, my Aunt Evelyn, actually passed away. The last night of the reunion, we went to the World War II Museum as part of that, you know, as part of that reunion. And then the very last night, everybody gets together and reminisces and this and that. And Rudy couldn't come because his mom was so ill. And she did, in fact, pass away that night at 98 and a half years old. And so besides for the Dallas one and COVID, due to COVID, I've been to everyone since then. Rudy, at his age of 85 now, is finding it harder and harder to travel. So he came to the Rhode Island one, the Newport, Rhode Island one, 3 years ago. And
Gonna try and make the next one here.
Yeah, last year was Fort Bragg. It was an unbelievable experience. I'll have to send you, Rob, the Secretary of the Army, not that he didn't have more important things to do.
What can be more important than Easy Company? Come on.
He gave us a 2-minute dissertation. Has anybody sent you that?
No, haven't seen.
Yeah, I'll send it to you in the next day or so. It's pretty impressive. You know, Dan Driscoll, I think is his name, Secretary of the Army. And they really treated us like kings and queens there. And the next reunion is at Fort Campbell in Kentucky, and it's the 80th. It's the 80th reunion. Chris Langlois probably told you in more detail how he and others promised the vets that we would continue with these reunions, even though 2 years ago the last vet passed away. And there's no remaining.
That was Brad, right? Was Brad was the last one?
Right. And so, so we're going to continue doing it as far as we're able. It's the same, pretty much the same group comes every year. and we're in our 70s and 80s. And then of course, the latest was when they had this special event at Toccoa a month or two ago, where they, they made some major renovations there, and they invited, I don't know how they invited certain people, but my wife and I got invited, and we went and spent Friday, Saturday, and Sunday there. And we did walk up Currahee, 3 miles up and 3 miles down. And it's not easy, especially when you're thinking that they typically were in boots, and had their backpacks and 80 pounds worth of gear.
That's right.
Running up and down that thing. We didn't have to have anything, So
did you say hi, O Silver?
Yeah, hi, O Silver. Right. We watched as part of this, and the lead writer being there, and Farnsworth being there and presenting with us, we did watch the first and second scene while we were there at night. And the gentleman that played Dukeman was there, and Renee Marino, who was in 7 episodes, was
Renee,
there.
I talked with Renee a few months ago.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Unbelievably nice guy.
Yeah. Oh, I had a great conversation with him. And I also spoke with
Mark Lawrence.
Alex Sabgabrin, who I think also was in Toccoa with you. I think he told me that he was on his way there at the time.
Huh.
I'm pretty sure. Maybe I'm mixing things up. But I know that Renee told me that.
Rob, I'd like to give you one little antidote from thing that happened in the trip, the 05 trip.
Okay.
My favorite conversation, we get on the bus with all the vets in Paris and we're heading out, and a gal who is one of the organizer comes and sits down with us on the bus and says, we have a problem with, don't have enough rooms at the hotel. Would you mind staying at the chateau? And we said, yeah, we can stay at the chateau. So during the time we were in Normandy, we were at the chateau with the Count and the Contessa and having a great time while the vets were in a hotel somewhere.
Definitely a memory that you must cherish, of course.
Oh, yeah. They really treated Rudy and I, for whatever reason, almost like we were vets. I don't know. it was pretty funny, but it was definitely a fun trip, that's for sure.
Over the years, we have collected a lot of information about Easy Company and Alex.
When we were at Jacques Woods, where they intimated that they thought we were close to where Muck and Pincala got killed. Percanti and Malarkey were hugging and crying their eyes out as if it just had happened, instead of 75 years ago or, so it was 60 years ago at that time. It was like it happened yesterday. I mean, we got them all on film. Rudy and I did like 800 pictures, both of us separately, and also
like 5 hours of video.
Yeah, 5 or 6 hours of video, and we have those guys, hugging and crying over the whole situation, which was also, unreal. So thought I'd throw that in.
Yeah. Okay. Perfect. Okay. All right. Well, thank you both. I really do appreciate the time you've devoted for this.
Well, you're so welcome. And we appreciate being able to talk a little about our uncle, Alex Pincala Jr.